Okay. My name is Duncan. I'm working in the Yas team for the basically package and batch management. We'll talk more or less quickly because we don't have much time about what is package management, why would we brought CWPP into SUSE, how it was done before. I will show you more or less what the new features we introduced in 10.2, and then we are going to see what are we doing now to fix the mess. So package management, as you must say, RPM or dev packages are not package management. They are just a backend, a storage format, and you need something on top of it. Basically, allowing the users to create a transaction over the software you have installed in your system, keeping it in a consistent state, and in the more automatic way possible. So in this example, you have Smart, apt-get, and Yast itself. Till SUSE 10.0, we had what's called the package manager, and it suffered from a lot of problems that we started to get features from customers, and it was impossible to add these features because it was so unflexible, and a lot of stuff was coded in Yast itself. So if you wanted to use this functionality from other piece of code, it was impossible. So for example, the selections, when you have a group of packages you want to install, they basically were just a list of packages in the UI, and that was completely, they had no dependencies, actually. And patches never existed. They were a quick hack of collections of RPMs that were also not also resolvable, solved by a real solver. And we got also the integration with SendWorks, that basically, when SUSE and Novell merged, we need to at least provide the customer some integration or at least interaction between the tools. So, how does CWPP solve this problem? Basically, it defines what is a resolvable, that is any entity that can be solved together with other to get a transaction or a collection in a consistent state. And in resolvables, you have patches, messages, scripts. Basically, messages and scripts are part of the patches, because when you install a patch, you a lot of time you see a message like warning, this patch is blah blah blah, or a script that can just execute and fix something in your system. You have selections, where are the old package groups, and you have patterns that we will talk later about them, which are basically better selections. And also there are system and language resolvables, and that's new in CWPP. We got a better solver than in the past package manager, because the past package manager only did basically pick up a package, see the requirements, and went to pick up the other packages. And we got a design that allows us to at least evolve and fix it without too much trouble. For example, it's easy to add new kind of sources or repositories. Now we support only the former CD metadata and the YAML one, which are most popular, but we can add more in the future. So this is more or less how CWPP looks inside. You have the component solver, and you have all the repositories which are the sources. And you have also the concept called targets, which is basically targets provide information and also allow to commit information. One target is RPM that provides all the, but RPM is also act like a source too. It provides the install packages, and the target mode alias, for example, provides information about the kernel or the hardware that the system has. And you have the sources like YAML or DBD that provides packet resolvables. All these resolvables are put in a pool, and then you call the solver and you get a transaction, which is like something you can commit back to a target. So, in order to model this, CWPP introduces capabilities, which is basically what you know about dependencies in other package management system, but much more abstract, because capabilities in other systems basically are what we call name capabilities, which are capabilities of this type, like a package can depend on KVMs, a certain version minor than 3.2.1. They are always grouped in requires, conflict, suggest, and the others you see there. But we also allow other kind of capabilities, like, for example, this is a crazy idea, it doesn't happen, it doesn't exist, but we could make a package in order to be installed to require that the system has been uptime for 2 years. That's something totally crazy. But there is the use case, for example, that you want to suggest a driver in the package selection when you have a certain hardware installed. If the driver is saying, you don't have this hardware, you don't need to suggest this package, but you want to do it automatically. So, as we have packages and patches as resolvables, there is also a system resolvable, which is the, just imagine one package, which is a virtual package that gets created when you start the CWPP itself. So a package like a window driver can supplement hardware from the kernel, and this system resolvable provides those capabilities. But what this system resolvable provides depends on what do you have in this system at the moment you're running. So that allows to suggest packages and patches in depending on the hardware you have. We also have parents, which is no longer it's like a selection, but you don't longer list packages, but you can list also capabilities. So in the case, for example, web servers, before you could list all the packages a web server has, and now you can say, you can also have PHP, but you don't require to have it. If you have it, you don't break the pattern. A use case, for example, is, you know what KSK is? It's when you want to the user, the administrator of a machine to log certain options from the menus, for example, to using in a virtual cafe, internet cafe. So there is a KSK package, for example, and you have KSK support for KDE and KSK support for GNOME. So you have the pattern GNOME and KDE, which are visible in the screen selection, in the package selection. And you have also these two patterns which are completely invisible, you don't see them. So the KDE QSK pattern will be installed only if KDE is selected, and this also is if KDE is selected and QSK is selected. So if you have a user that is running KDE and also is running a QSK support, the QSK support for KDE will be automatically recommended. And those things were not possible to do with selections. And it's not also possible to do in any other package management. So patches. Before, patches were just a bunch of RPMs with some checksums to check that they are the right ones. But now patches are much more flexible. It's like, you can actually install a patch even if you don't have the problem, but that will end in a transaction that is completely null. I mean, if you have packages that are newer than what the patch rule says, then the package will not be recommended. But you can install it. I said, please install the patch. That will result only the rules are being applied to your system. But if your system already conformed to the rules, nothing will happen. Then if you try to go back to a package older, you downgrade a package, when you start to CWPP, this rule that is applied, which is a patch, will break. The solver will say, hey, in order to still have this rule, you will need to upgrade this package, do something with it, because it's too old. And this package can also recommend newer packages and also messages and scripts, which allow to basically do anything. I think this is the concept CWPP that needs more time to mature, because at least the repo data format is a little bit ugly still. So for 10.1, the old package selector was enhanced to see the patches. And this is something we need to fix, and this will take time. Because as I said before, the patches and the selection were just a list of packages. Now in CWPP, when you have a patch, you have no idea which packages this patch has. Because the patch itself doesn't list patches, but it lists requirements or rules at the end. So in order, Puma, which is who implemented the package selector, in order to get the package, it has to do a hack and solve and get the packages that were selected by the patch. So we need to figure a new UI for the CWPP concept. Also, you can have packages that provide certain language. and the system resolvable provide languages too. So you can match packages to be automatically recommended depending on the language you have in your system. We also introduced for Fontainebleau 1 what is trusted repositories, which is we based it on the RPM keyring, because RPM already has, I don't like this, the design of that, because it puts the keys inside the RPM database. But it was a nice way to say, okay, if the key's there, I trust it. So we consider the RPM keyring like the master of authority in trusted keys. So the model is the same as in every repo data format. You have repo data, metadata that says a list of files, and this file lists other files, and at the end, one file lists a package. So this file says this package checksum is this one. So if you try to modify this package, you have to change the checksum here. And if you change the checksum here, this file has not the same checksum, and you have to change this one, and so on. At the end, you sign this file with a SUSE key. So whatever you touch, you break it. And this, as you use a library now, for YAST is much more easy. Any application that uses UOPP can implement functionality with the trusted repositories. We also did some server integration. It was a complete disaster, but it was a complicated stuff because they have completely different models. I mean, even now, you will see some inconsistencies. If you see the SendWorks updater, it will list all the new packages. We were supposed only to show the patches that are basically fixes for problems that the SUSE guys know, and they release a patch. But in SendWorks data, you will see packages and patches, and sometimes this package is also in the patch, and that's completely consistent, but they have completely different models. But SendWorks for SUSE system is using CWPP for dependency resolving. In other systems, like Red Hat, they still use Red Carpet. So for 10.2, we fixed a lot of regressions. You know, 10.1 basically had a lot of regressions compared to 10.0 in terms of what the old packet selector provided. So we mostly concentrated on the regressions, and that was showing the user progress information, because it was so slow and we basically didn't have any progress information. And it was funny because there were like comments in the mail list saying, oh, this task is now much more faster, and the code was the same. But we just added some progress information, and the user psychologically think that it goes faster. So that's why, yeah, people also think that we introduced this progress bar that go really fast and flickers, because we want to show that it was fast. But that's because with YAM it's really difficult to show progress information, because as you read the XML file, you discover what you have to process, but you don't know it beforehand. And the other regression was to provide a command line tool. So then Cipher was born. Cipher is including 10.2. In 10.2, actually, when you install 10.2, you can select two patterns. You can select an enterprise pattern, which will install SendWorks, and I think that's default. And we also introduced, for the first time, OpenSUSE software management stack. We didn't make it default because it was like we were still trying it or introducing it slowly. If you install the OpenSUSE version, you will get, instead of RAP, you will get Zipper. They have exactly the same syntax, so you don't have to learn anything new. They have the same commands and everything. The only difference is that Zipper uses directly the system, and RAP goes through the SendWorks D1 and all the enterprise tools. For 10.3, RAC got a shell, so if you are going to do a lot of operations, you don't need to, because RAC has the same problem as CWPP that takes a lot of seconds to start. So you start RAC, you start Zipper, and it has to read all the sources and then install the package. But if you want to install a lot of packages, you don't want to have this start up time multiple times. So you just call it in shell mode, it will read once the system, and then you can do all the operations you want. So in the people using Factory can already try Zipper SH. We also introduced this OpenSUSE updater, which was a nice experience, because It was born as a Google Summer Code project. Originally, it was an application that talked with SendWords. And later, we added the backend to talk with CWT, and it resulted that it's really light. I mean, consumed really little system resources. The advantage of the applet is basically that all the functionality is in CWP, so the applet is really done. So in the future, if you want to have a known version of the applet, it's really, really easy to do. I mean, that will be a project that will be nice for the community to do it, because it's really easy. Basically, the applet doesn't know anything, doesn't have a clue about anything. It just sends a message to CWP, what's the status of mine, and this program answers back and gives you are old, and those are the updates you want you have available. And all the rest is handled by Yast. If you click more installation sources, Yast will be started. And if you click update my system, Yast will be started. The documentation for this protocol is also documented in OpenSUSE in case you want to use it. I think a sys administrator can use this the same binary the update uses for talking to the system. You can use it in a script, for example, to know about updates and do scripting and emailing, notifying, I don't know. So for 10.3, what we are working on now is to remove the mess we have with reading the sources all the time you do something. So we are trying to design a binary cache that basically we will parse the repositories once and then construct everything on demand. If you take the memory CWP uses now, it's about, I think, 200 megabytes or something, if you parse factory a couple of times. Because we read the complete descriptions and everything from factory and put it in memory. And for a lot of tasks, you don't need descriptions. So all those tasks are being compared to the on-demand tasks. It should be faster, but it's not magic. I mean, the problem is when you go to factory, if you work with small repositories, everything goes fine. But factory, the metadata is around, I don't know, 200 megabytes or something. If we don't touch the file list, if you count the file list in the dependencies, then it becomes a really harsh problem. I mean, any embedded database, even SQLite or MySQL embedded, when you have databases near to a gig, then you start to lose performance horrible. And even if you go using indexes, the data grows and grows and grows. And the point is we have to use this in installation. So it's a real challenge to do it right. We have also in progress some tools to use CWP from other languages. Originally it was only a Ruby prototype, but now we have like a half-finished bindings that will be used from Java, .NET, and Python, or everything. So you could do solving from these tools. They are in hard mode for now because the CWP is changing a lot. We want to finish the API and then we'll provide the bindings. This is the best thing I have seen since OpenSUSE happened, but Benjamin, which is there, presented this prototype, which basically can be the answer to click and run from OpenSUSE. Basically, in the OpenSUSE build service search that they have, you can click a package to install and you get this wizard. So this wizard can add repositories, automatically the repositories you need for this package, and then install the package. It's a prototype, but I mean, he said it's a prototype, but it works. And I would like to push this because it's a nice answer to what the competitors are doing. And that is questions.
That this is really a problem, parsing all this stuff and keeping it in memory. Do we ever get an installation system which works with 128 megabytes of main memory?
Do we ever get what?
An installation system which is capable of installation of an OpenSUSE with 128 megabytes or something like that? What do you think?
With the old SUSE metadata, it's not possible. Because if you compress it, and you try to really compress, you can bring it to the RAM disk, and it could use, I think, mostly 40 megabytes for a really big repository. The problem is with YAML. YAML is really verbose, and YAML uses the same size compressed size of YAML is the same size as uncompressed version of the CD metadata. So for the CD it's quite okay. But for example, if you try to add factory as an add-on product, and you, I don't know if the add-on product is created when you are still RAM, then you can just not copy the metadata to RAM disk. It just doesn't fit. But the YAML format is, I mean, horrible, but there is nothing better that in terms of a lot of people using it. Everyone is pushing it because everyone uses it. So I will go for the Debian people has a lot of nice ideas and they are working a lot of time. What's the problem? Those people didn't document anything. So if you search in Google for the Debian format, there's no specification. You have to go to the cache and start seeing what they do. That's the point.
What's the question on small computers? Suppose you have a 10.1 installed. What would you recommend for managing packages if you are working on a small footprint computer?
You mean to install the packages?
Yeah, if you know, for example, how to give a suggestion on how to tune the those demons of package management just to not distress the memory.
I mean, if you want to go the SUSE way, 10.2 is much faster and better and low memory than 10.1 version. So 10.2, if you have a small machine, you should not be using like factory. I mean, even depending on what do you define with that, you mean a low-end computer, just a pen or something?
I'll change my question. Is there any way to make those tools that are too much consuming resources is there any way to tune them?
Because
I'm ignorant on that thing.
Yeah.
I'm asking.
There are competitor tools. So for example, in the OpenSUSE community, it's really famous Smart. It's a little bit faster.
Is it really a replacement?
It's not a replacement. Smart can install packages. I mean, a lot of people ask us why we don't use Smart, for example. But Smart is a really crazy solver. It's not deterministic in any way and doesn't have any test case. So, for example, CWPP has like 330 test cases of this is the repository, this is the system, this is the action, this is the result. And Smart doesn't have that. And the algorithm that they change it all the time. What is the right transaction? And you don't want to in a data center to have sometimes the kernel to be downgraded, sometimes not. We have to tell the customer this is what we do in this case. But for a small machine, Smart could be a quite nice option in terms of memory. Uses less memory than
us. So maybe it's lesser features, but
but it
could be a convenient way.
So yeah, but Nintendo 2 CPERC also is low, doesn't use that much memory. It's a little slow, yes.
Oh, the problem is in 10.1, sorry.
Ah, you should upgrade to 10.2.
So, yeah.
For 10.1, yeah, probably Smart is the way to go. But I will, if you will be using 10.2, try the new tools.
I've got 10.1, and I know that. The problem is different because I'm looking for escape in the 10.1 situation.
Okay.
That was my answer. My
probably we could backport the new tools to 10.1. I mean, should not be. With the OpenSUSE build service, I mean, it should be easy that someone tries to backport the tools, the new tools.
If I understood you correctly, you were talking at some point about user invisible packages based on rules. So if this package is installed and this package is installed, then automatically the dirt is installed.
Yeah.
That's independent of which of the two is installed first. So if you install the second one a month later, the dirt gets installed immediately.
It depends. For the solver, it is valid if the package is already installed.
Yes.
Or if you already marked it for installed.
Okay. And if you deinstall one of the two, then the dirt also
deinstalled. In the case of the pattern, let's go back to that slide. Yeah. In the case of the pattern, it's like if you have a KD and you have QSK, KD QSK will be installed. But if you remove KD QSK, you remove QSK, then you don't need the KD QSK support.
So
you will
get removed, right.
You will break the pattern at some point. Because the pattern KD QSK depends on QSK. So if you remove it, you will break this pattern, and the solver will tell you either keep the pattern and install the software or remove the pattern.
There are
three factors that basically say the speed of the end user. One is really download time. I mean, download a package, the factory package file is huge. I mean, if you are in a slow connection, for me it takes at least 2 minutes from home, for example. Then parsing. The problem is that we, as you say, we have capabilities, and these capabilities can be HAL or can be, they have really language, so parsing these capabilities takes a lot of time, and we do it really bad with regular expression and other stuff. So when we use a catch, we basically store that part. We don't parse it again, and that is much faster. I don't have real numbers because we haven't finished the catch. So, but SendWorks uses the SendWorks backend uses a database, and they take around 3 seconds to build a source. So that's much faster than. The problem is you use much more disk space, of course, because you have to replicate the data you have. You have to keep the raw catch to detect changes and everything. You have the parsed version, and also you have to build indexes, and that uses a lot of space. But you can't do anything when you have half a gigabyte of data there. You have to do it in some way. Okay, no more questions? No. Thanks.